might have been in possession of the drugs?
He had gotten the question just right. Yes, I don't think Mr. Mobley would have come toward the roadblock if he knew the drugs were under his seat, Salt answered. The defense attorney did not ask what she had seen to lead her to say yes. He had the good sense to quit right then.
Move to dismiss, Your Honor.
The solicitor threw up his hands while still looking at the other cops.
No objection, Your Honor, he said with disgust.
And in a bit of melodrama, he let the charge ticket for Lil D fall to the floor.
Charges dismissed. Next case, said the judge,
monotone, pushing up the sleeve to his robe and leaning closer to the light from his computer. Lil D turned to scan the courtroom, the first time during the hearing that he showed an emotion, his eyes wide, white around the edges. Salt followed his glance, ignoring all that he ignored, focusing on what was his focus, watching until he was led out of the courtroom, to the back door, and freedom. The city attorney turned to Salt and watched her walk past through the swinging gate that led from the front of the courtroom to the aisle. She could still feel him watching as she walked past her fellow cops, who, for now, were silent and also watching her. She stared straight ahead, eyes on the red exit sign above the courtroom door. All through the shift, the calls, she thought about the restraints being removed from Lil D, his release, and wondered if she had given him a dangerous chance. Chapter 30. Answering to Pepper. From a closed-hearing skirmish between a teenager and her mother, to a box-cutter duel, two fender-benders, backing up Lessing on a chase involving an 18-wheeler, a break-in at a cat-hole shanty, and a community meeting at the church, the rest of Salt's Friday was, well, Friday. The air murky with heat and humidity, she could smell herself, the funk that steamed between the Kevlar vest and her damp undershirt, 38 rusting under her left arm. Back now at the empty church, she slid her spotlight over the old stones of the building. The African Methodist Episcopal congregation kept the door a freshly painted, shiny fire engine red. At night, the door took on a darker, blood-red hue. Turning the spotlight handle, Salt illuminated the stained glass windows, each of which depicted one of Jesus's disciples, Judas leading lambs to slaughter, Peter's window shattered by bullet holes, his fishing boat patched with cardboard. Navigating the driveway that circled the church, steering with one hand, she swung the spot up and down, side to side, with her other hand. This was Sister Connolly's church, where the funeral for Q-Ball had been held, where the funerals for other drug boys were held. Salt had been to many community meetings in the sanctuary, and felt more at home here in some ways than in the rural church she had attended growing up. The choir here was better, more enthusiastic, louder, and with stirring rhythms. When the calls allowed, on some Wednesday nights, she parked to hear them practice, just outside the window of John, the beloved disciple, shown with his hands over his heart. Gardenias that grew beside the stone facade were dropping the last cream-to-brown petals, the intensity of their scent not too far off the too sweet odor of decomposing flesh. Other than echoing gunshots, the home's equivalent of wolves howling, the church grounds were silent. Radio wasn't reporting the shots fired. Nobody bothered calling them in. The only lights around the church were two dim streetlights, too high up on their poles, and the portable electric sign at the drive entrance. It announced next Sunday's sermon, Feed My Sheep. Except for the white noise of the expressway in the distance, there were no sounds at all after the distant gunfire ceased. She swept the side of the church before checking around the corner and back wall under the window of Simon the Zealot speaking to a crowd. The church groundskeeper's name was also Simon. He worked on Saturdays, keeping the outside of the church pristine. There wasn't a scrap of trash anywhere except under the window of Matthew, the tax collector, bronze now from the flash of her light, where the back basement stairs were littered with crack bags and used condoms from Saturday night. She checked the stairs. The third window on the back belonged to James the Martyr, his head falling under a sword. With the engine idling, small night noises emerged. Tree frogs, crickets, and the odd night bird calling in the dark.
3307. Radio, raise 3306.
Pepper's voice over the mic was empty of its usual smile.
3306.
She sounded formal, even to herself.
3307. Name a location.
Salt hesitated. Knowing he'd heard about court today, the tone in his voice confirmed it.
3307 to 3306, location,
he demanded again.
3306,
Meldon and Lansing,
she said into the shoulder mic.
Meldon and Lansing, he replied.
The window disciples were silent, dim shadows, set back into the stone walls, and of no help as she tried to find the words to make sense of this for Pepper. We meet to talk about what just happened, what we did or didn't do, and why. We try to make sense of the sorriness, the hilarity, the stuff we witness by telling stories, trying to find some moral or meaning, something that will save us next time. A dim glow from one streetlight fell at an angle, illuminating the passenger side of her cruiser. Her uniform hat sat on top of her gear bag. She picked it up and turned it over. Their hats had plastic liners, in the center of which was a clear pocket intended for a name card. Most of the cops kept photos there of their mates and children. Salt had a close-up of Wonder smiling, his small, strong front teeth in a bit of an overbite. She pulled out the picture of her dog. Behind it was another photo, a girl, herself as a 10-year-old, the focus a little blurry, the camera too close. Her skinny legs stiff and straight, locked in an awkward pose, red shorts stretched in the legs, making her look even thinner. But it was the eyes that hijacked the photo. Some quirk of light had given her blue eyes an odd cast, like a version of red eye, only whitish. She looked like a haunting child, glowy-eyed, like she had some superpower or X-ray vision. Salt felt an unreasonable affection for the photo, remembering her father aiming, clicking three times to be sure one would be good. Pepper's headlights caught her off guard. She hadn't thought he'd be so close by. As he pulled into the lot, she put the photos in her left shirt pocket. He stopped driver to driver beside her and pushed the gear arm to park. Then he just sat there, staring straight ahead, not looking at her. Then finally,
"What are you doing?"
He turned, his dark face shiny with sweat from the hot, busy night. "Nothing," she said, lowering her hand from the itchy scar. Insects flew furiously in the widening beams from the car's headlights. She blinked, and the lot came alive with jumping and flickering cicadas and moths.
"What was that about in court today with Lil D?"
She cut the engine and pushed the light knob to off.
"What did you hear, Pepper? I just told the truth, and the case was dismissed."
"I heard you through the case."
His voice came out too loud.
"You know Stone set Lil D up."
Her voice right on top of his.
"What I know is Lil D sells dope in Man's gang. Whether Stone had his hands on that dope first is irrelevant. Lil D sells it."
"It's not irrelevant to me."
"You've let this get personal. Stone, Man, Lil D... They've gotten to you. Who are you trying to save?
A cloud passed over the moon, further dusting the church and saints with darkness.
Stone set Lil D up. Lil D knows it. Now Lil D is out. How do you think that's going to play in the street? So if it's Lil D you wanted to save, he's directly in the vulture's sight now. You're not thinking clear. I'll go to man.
She snuck a rub at her scalp, her fingers finding the ribbon of bunched skin.
Stop it, Salt! He barked and banged on the steering wheel. God damn it, and quit clawing at your head! You're going to rub it raw! Stay out of the gang's business! Let Homicide work Chanel's murder! But they don't know the Holmes like I do!
Her scalp was now furious with itching, but she kept her hand down.
Nobody knows the Holmes like you do. Nobody should. You're too close. We're supposed to have each other's back. You are my friend, my partner, but you've been keeping things to yourself.
She could still feel the touch of Pepper's fingers parting her hair along the bloody wound.
I've been given this beat, this assignment.
She'd wanted to call it her mission. She turned on the ignition, felt the gears. At first, Pepper didn't move, just sat there watching her. Slowly, she began to back the car with her head out the window, trying to readjust her vision. The light from the pole did a double halo, and she was distracted just for the second it took to drive her cruiser an inch too close to his car. The side view mirrors on both cars cracked.
Damn,
she said, backing up and pulling up again. A sliver of pain, like a tiny glass shard, pinched in her head. How many years of bad luck have I brought us? Pepper's mirror fell and hung by the wires.
How many years have you been in the Holmes?
He reached for the dangling mirror and tried to pull it free of the wires. He finally just let it hang and drove on out of the lot. Salt pulled past the funnel of light from the pole and glanced in the cracked side-view mirror. There were three crack lines in the glass, and she couldn't recognize anything reflected there. She touched her pocket with her right hand, but thought of Lil D's face right before he left the courtroom. Chapter 31 Establishing Dirty Red.
God damn, I hate this, Salt announced again to Thomas.
ATF had called someone in the department to get her a temporary assignment to Wills's guy, Agent Thomas, so they could find Red.
Come on, you know the rules. Information from an unreliable source cannot be used as probable cause for a search warrant, Thomas argued.
I know, I do know, but Red has to live here after you're gone.
What do you care? She's a crackhead whore.
They were sitting in his Taurus, the federal car, all shiny without a speck of dust. A cloying air freshener polluting the new car smell, making her nauseated. Unlike her patrol car, there were no bullet holes, no lingering body odors.
Nice car, she said flatly. Couldn't you get it washed, though?
She ran a finger over the spotless stash. The light changed, and Thomas, at her direction, turned off Lakewood onto Jonesboro. Thomas was wearing a white knit shirt and tan khakis, like he had just come from the golf course. His scalp was pink under a buzz cut. She was wearing her best jeans, but her herding boots were mucky from the night before. They passed to the drunks at the liquor store, the dope holes, the whores, and just folks trying to get by. Agent Thomas looked out at the people on the street and the crumbling architecture, cut his eyes, and gave his mouth a twist. A sneer that looked practiced rather than earned. Salt liked the idea of Red as an informant less and less. The bleak eyes of the people shifted as the Taurus drove by. Turn right at the next street, she instructed. On Red's sister's narrow avenue, an older model Buick slowly passed them, farting exhaust over the clean Taurus that screamed cops. Big Red was in the yard cooking something on a homemade 10-gallon drum grill.
Stop here.
Big looked down through a cloud of smoke coming off the grill. Thomas sensed Salt's hesitation.
What? He asked.
Just so we're clear, neither of us is fooling anybody around here, she said, then opened the door.
He got out and followed her up the steps to the yard.
Hi, Big, she said, lifting her hand and walking over to the grill. This is Officer Thomas.
Agent Thomas, he corrected.
Agent, said Big. What you an agent of, 00? I know you ain't no secret agent.
Big was wearing the same shapeless dress she had had on when Salt was there before, and she was sweating rivers down her chest and arms. Thomas looked around the yard like a tourist from another planet.
What he doing with you, and why are you coming back to my house in that car?
Sorry, Big. I'm looking for Red again.
You gon' get that girl killed coming here in that car with Mr. 00.
Ma'am, started Thomas.
Big snapped, Don't you talk to me while I'm cooking. She pointed a long grilling fork at Thomas, who took a step back, his elbow against the butt of his gun. But Big had turned back to the grill and started stabbing at some chicken wings. About 2 dozen wings were beginning to brown.
Salt stepped closer to the grill, and Big Red. We don't want to mess up your dinner.
Man, that smells good.
She leaned over, inhaling deeply. Big Red busied herself swabbing sauce and turning wings.
I need Red's help, Salt told her. I need her help, quick. It's already dangerous for her.
You gonna help her?
I'm not promising anything.
I know you ain't.
If I can just get her quick and get her out.
Big bent over the grill.
So it's like a race. You quick enough, you win. But what do Red win? And what does she lose? Do you lose too?
Salt couldn't tell if her eyesight was acting up again, or if it was just the increasing smoke from the grill making her eyes water. She looked through the hazy smoke over at Thomas, who had turned away and was standing there with his back to them, watching the tourists. Big was furiously flipping wings.
I'm not going to lie to you. I might be putting your sister between a rock and a hard place, but she might be able to help us catch a killer.
What if the killer catch her?
Big stabbed harder at the wings. Grease sizzled and popped on the coals.
Can I have one of those wings? Salt pointed at the grill. This is what heaven must smell like.
Big speared and lifted a black and brown crispy wing off the grill.
Careful, it's hot.
Salt took the end of the wing between her thumb and finger, holding as little of the hot chicken between her nails as she could, blowing on the steamy skin, inhaling its smoky tang. Her teeth were already touching the meat when Big stopped moving the wings and said,
She in the house.
The skin of the chicken was crisp. The meat juicy and full of smoky flavor. She took her time stripping the meat and then started chewing on the end knuckle. She bit down hard to the marrow, her teeth crunching the bone. Thomas just kept staring at the Taurus, as if it might leave without him. Big pointed her grilling fork at Thomas.
I ain't giving him one of my wings.
Where are your manners? Salt said, grinning at Big. Still sucking on the bone, she walked over to Thomas.
I'm going in the house while you chat with Big. She wants you to come over and have a wing.
I'm not going near that woman, much less eating something she cooked.
Suit yourself, then. Watch the car. I'll be inside.
She took her time walking toward the house, keeping watch for movement around the outside and behind the curtains. Up on the porch, she reached for the doorknob, but found the knob and the lock were gone. Now there was just a round hole in addition to the busted lower part. She pushed the door open. Dirty Red was sitting on the sofa in the living room, waiting, this time wearing clothes, a loose pair of men's plaid shorts and a pink t-shirt with the sleeves ripped off.
You said I wouldn't have to do any more.
Red tried to stand, already trying to talk her way out of something.
Red, I... Salt started.
Who that man out there drooling over Big's wings? You bring a date?
Agent Thomas from ATF.
What he got to do with anything?
The statement you gave me was good, but to use it, we have to get you to wear a wire, to get Stone on a recording.
No way!
Red flopped back on the worn sofa.
No, no, no!
She slumped and swung her head. Salt took a breath, then turned her back on Red. There's money, she said, and waited, watching the smoke from the grill blowing in the hot evening air. Red coughed twice, then sniffed. I'm sorry. Salt turned to face her. Red wiped her nose on her hand.
How much money?
She asked. Paid informants for the feds can earn a lot, for as long as they can provide information. The muscles in her face felt like rope, and her eyes stung. Red stood on her wobbly legs.
What I got to do?
Wear a wire and deliver guns to Stone, and get him to talk about you buying the guns for him. The grease from Big's wing had turned to a bad coating in Salt's mouth. Red looked over at the window. The smoke rose into the leaves high above the house. Salt had to lean down at the window to follow the plumes that drifted in the oak that must have been growing since before the Civil War. One limb of the tree had broken off, rotted, and was caught in lower branches. The next storm would bring it crashing down. Red sighed.
When?
Now. Salt turned from the view outside. She could make this work. We've already got the guns and the wire ready. Do you know where to find Stone tonight?
Probably. But I ain't leaving here with you and that agent. Stone likely already know you been here with that car out front.
Just walk up to the corner in 2 hours, and we'll have an agent posing as a John pick you up in a white van. He'll have the wire and the guns. Where do you put them for Stone to pick up?
We use that old run-down yellow house at Thurkill in Meldon. There's some boards loose in the closet wall. I put them there. He goes and gets them when I tell him.
Do you owe him guns now?
Yeah. He gave me $100 2 weeks ago to buy 2 guns, and I smoked it.
He gonna hurt you? Red shrugged.
He hurt me sooner or later anyway. Maybe not too bad if I have guns for him to pick up.
Not too bad. Shit, Salt mumbled.
What's wrong with you? You ain't got to do it, Red said.
I'll be listening on the wire, like I'm there with you.
Yeah, you'll be listening, but when you gonna open the door and come in?
I won't say trust me. You know the deal. I've put you exactly where I didn't want you to be. She walked quickly to the door as she talked, afraid that if she were there any longer, she'd spoil the agreement, untie the knot. 2 hours, at 11, on Jonesboro. Red followed to the hall, then had to lean against the door sill to the living room. Salt put her hand out for the knob of the front door, having forgotten it was missing. She turned back to Red and tried to think of something more to say. Red said,
"Push."
Salt pushed the flimsy door and walked out.
"What's that noise?" Thomas asked.
"Whee!"
There it was again, a breathy, injured bird sound coming from the monitor.
Whee!
Salt, Thomas, and the tech agent, Marendoza, were in a mud-spattered van marked ABC Pest Control, with the logo of a large insect with plexiglass eyes. The van rolled slowly through the dark, narrow streets along the back side of the homes. Marendoza had read on the speaker so they could hear as she met up with Stone, and hopefully got in and out without harm to herself, as well as getting Stone to incriminate himself and establishing her legal reliability.
"It's her. Red. Sounds like she's trying to whistle," said Marendoza.
Dirty Red was struggling with each note,
flat, then sharp. The rustling coming over the speaker reflected her disjointed walking, walking and whistling. She kept repeating wrong notes. Whee! Times 8.
She's not very good at it, said Thomas. She sucks.
He laughed.
Get it? She sucks. She's a whore. She sucks.
The vehicle was soundproof. Their voices couldn't be heard from outside. Salt and Thomas sat across from each other on metal built-in benches, where they jostled and slipped as the van made turns and pumped over potholes. Bending over made the 5-shot 38 stuck in the waist of her jeans bite at her skin. The bubble windows, the bug's blind eyes on the outside of the van, limited her view. The streams of moonlight were distorted, as if viewed through water or tears. She strained to focus on the usual streets and buildings of the homes. Things looked even worse through the bug's eyes. Broken toys looked spit onto the littered yards. Sad cars, jacked on concrete blocks, sat in uneven suspension, hopeless. Nothing could be seen that might recommend a life here. She sat back, closed her eyes, and tried to imagine what Red looked like whistling. She's trying to comfort herself, Salt said. Red was wearing, in addition to the wire, a homing device that allowed the agents in the pest control van to follow at a distance. Salt didn't know when she'd see Red again, since she'd be leaving the surveillance devices with her big sister and didn't want to be put at risk by having any further contact with any of them. Red had walked off down Meldon, having told them that she would meet Stone in an apartment on Shaw Street, and that he often took her to other apartments nearby after the initial meeting place. Thomas said they'd play hell trying to pinpoint the exact apartment. Salt leaned her head back against the soundproofing wall blanket. She had an image of Red, naked, like she'd been at her sister's, wearing the red heels Salt had bought for the John detail. How many apartments can you narrow it down to? She asked, not for the first time, hoping the answer would change somehow.
We can follow her to the building. That's all, Marendoza said. You can probably figure which unit after that. You know who lives in most of the apartments. You also recognize the gang members.
So it might all come down to her, again. And she was stuck in the van. She slid down the bench to be nearer the rear door.
We're not going to have to go in the apartment anyway. We just need her to get them on tape about the guns.
Thomas stood up, bent at the waist.
What's the worst he'll do? Slap her around some?
I'm not listening to him slap her around, Salt said. Now Thomas seemed to have more experience than she'd given him credit for. Even though the van was air-conditioned, her face felt like it was near a fire. Her palms began to sweat, and she wiped them on her jeans, over and over until her hands stung. Red stopped whistling. Thomas looked over at Marendoza. Then Red started again. The agents alternately watched the speaker and Salt as they followed Red on a parallel street. In the midnight hour, along the way, they'd passed a few lone stragglers and an unfamiliar beater, bass booming from its trunk. Nothing or no one that seemed likely to report suspicions to the gang or Stone. 8 notes, over and over, until finally Salt didn't know if she was beginning to recognize the tune or if she was creating the notes of an old hymn. She'd almost get the words to come, but then Red would hit a flat note. Then another note would go wrong when she ran out of breath. Her world narrowed to what she could hear from the speaker. She closed her eyes and kept them closed in order to concentrate, but the edge of the hard bench in the van began to reach her bones. 6 notes. Silence. 3 knocks.
Don't slow down. Keep moving, Thomas said to Marendoza.
Red was one block away on Shaw. behind two rows of Holmes buildings, according to the homing device. Locks clicked. The sound of a door separating from the sill. They heard something thud. Salt tensed, ready to stand. A whoosh like a silent cough sounded through the speaker. Salt inhaled sharply, but the van's ceiling was low, and her lungs couldn't fully expand with her head bent.
Bitch!
Stone's voice, a between-the-teeth hiss. Salt reached for the handle of the van. Thomas threw one leg out to block her before she got to the latch. She reached around him, but couldn't see to grab it.
I got two, Red said, sounding out of breath.
Salt spread her legs for balance and stood facing the back door, head tilted to listen to the speaker.
You owed me a gun 2 weeks ago.
Salt could almost see Stone's mouth as he spoke, lips tight over his gritted teeth. Another sound, like material ripping.
Where's the mic on her? Salt asked, looking at both Thomas and Mirandoza.
She put her hand to her waist, to the small pistol.
He won't find it,
Mirandoza said, eyeing her hand and glancing at Thomas.
Where is it? She repeated.
You ugly bitch.
Stone's voice sounded farther away from Red and the device. The sound jumped.
I got you too this time.
Stone's voice again.
Turn around.
Where's the bug?
Salt reached for the latch. Thomas moved his whole body, which put Salt's hand at his waist. His previously crisp shirt was limp. Her fingertips hit hard muscle.
I need money, or hit me up with a rock, Stone,
Red pleaded.
Why you gotta see me naked? Why you gotta put your hands all over me? You my half-brother,
Red cried with almost a glimmer of dignity.
The tracer and bug are in her hair, Mirandoza said. They're tiny. He wouldn't know what they were even if he saw them.
We got what we need, Thomas said. She established herself when he said she owed him the guns.
A cartoon melody sounded from the speaker. Salt sat up, rigid. The same melody again.
Oh, God, no, Salt whispered.
At once the agents looked at the speaker.
Ringtone.
Mirandoza nodded.
God. Get her out of there, Salt said.
She slumped at the bench. She'd underestimated Thomas's willingness to sacrifice Red.
He didn't move her because he has a lookout.
She looked directly at him, yet was blaming herself for having missed something. The ring of the phone was cut. Stone's one syllable,
Yo.
Now even Thomas and Mirandoza froze.
We didn't see anyone following us. You didn't see any lookout, said Mirandoza.
But he was whispering also, as if the speaker could hear, or as if whispering could protect Red.
Stone's voice, What you mean?
Salt began to pant in anticipation.
Shit, man!
Stone's voice roared into the van. This time she didn't try to go around Thomas. She moved toward him, use of force, street, one hand moving while she stretched out a sheep boot. The agent driving downshifted, grinding a gear. In the same second, Thomas was out of her way.
Wait, I think I heard the call end tone. Wait,
said Mirandoza. Salt already had the door open, the van still in motion when she heard Stone.
You late again, bitch. I'll kill you skinny hoe ass.
Nobody saw us. The call wasn't about us.
Mirandoza spoke to equipment. She looked back at the monitor, trying to pull confirmation from the air. Stone again, closer to the bug.
Those guns where they supposed to be?
The agent driving stepped on the brake. Salt used the braking momentum to swing the door shut. Sounds of movement over the speaker.
They at the yellow house, like always.
More rustling. Thomas looked at Mirandoza, rolled his eyes.
You city police got to hold on. Have a little faith.
He reached out, took Salt's forearm between his thumb and fingers, and gave it a friendly waggle. She jerked away and slumped to the bench.
"Pick it up, ho,"
Stone's voice,
"and get the fuck out of my sight."
Salt exhaled, then gagged. Stone was letting Red go. More movement and the sound of the door slamming. Then one note of a choked whistle came over the speaker. Red was out, walking again. Three notes, silence, then five notes, then all eight, over and over until finally she hit the note she had been flattening. Salt sat upright. She remembered the words from a Sunday school hymn. "I come to the garden alone." Red hit all the notes right. Chapter 32. Hard Times. The odor of metal lockers always reminded her of high school, as did the clacking of the doors catching, slamming open, then shut. Salt leaned her weight on her left hand, head bowed. Pepper brushed by, and it took her a few seconds to realize he'd said something.
"More than you'd think."
"Asshole," Pepper mouthed at Big Fuzzy across the precinct workroom. Sarge was signing and compiling paperwork at the long writing table.
"Get those reports over here before I retire. I want to go home tonight, too."
Metal ticket book holders clattered on the table. Half-written reports littered the floor. Adding to the locker room odor was something that smelled like a wet cigar. The shift dumped, then stumbled over each other's gear bags. They left boot prints on the fallen reports and tickets.
"Who you calling asshole, asshole?"
Their karma was fucked tonight, as sometimes happened. They were getting on each other's nerves. Not shy about letting emotion show. One emotion, anger, was the acceptable one.
"God damn, she's PMSing, and I swear you all go on the rag."
Sarge jerked reports and tickets from Pepper and Big Fuzzy.
"Nice, Sarge," Salt said to her open locker.
"Rough around here tonight."
Salt turned to find Will standing behind her in the locker aisle.
"I thought we might console each other."
She slammed the locker door. "Yeah, well, it's a lot rougher out there every night for Red." She picked up her bag. Will's tie was loosened, and there were perspiration marks on the sides of his white shirt.
"I came to tell you that we got the warrants for Stone."
"Fuck the warrants. It's not worth the risk of getting Red killed." Blessing walked by, cutting his eyes at them. The others lingered, scowling and growling at one another, and at Sarge across the room. Wills glanced toward the uniforms.
We did what you wanted.
What I wanted, you did what your ATF buddy wanted.
Come on, Salt.
He reached out to help her with her gear bag.
We just have to find Stone.
Before he finds Red? She swung the bag from his reach.
Who are you angry at? He asked as she walked past him.
The shift stood staring as he followed her through the precinct door. If you had done your job in the first place, Red wouldn't have had to go through what she did. You don't care about her or Chanel. She left him on the precinct landing while she continued toward her car. She had her bag stowed in the trunk and was unlocking the driver's door when he confronted her, pounding his fist on the fender.
I'm just a man, not a superhero like you. I've got 10 homicides I'm working, and I actually try to have a life other than this job.
And I don't have a life. Well, you're right, Wills. I go home to my dog every night. I'm sure you've got women stacked up waiting, like your unsolved homicides.
I don't deserve this crazy bullshit.
Crazy? She repeated, then turned her back on him, got into her car, and slammed the door.
Wills receded in the rearview mirror, watching as she tore out of the precinct drive. Salt twisted her neck, turning to face the living room and checking for wonder on the floor beside her. The green sofa cover was bunched under her thighs. She groaned, thinking about the harsh words between her and Wills last night. Wonder stirred, stretching in his sleep. She had a hunger pang and an ache from her full bladder. Her fist was balled tight under her tank t-shirt, between her sweat-sticky breasts. She scanned the entrance to the room from the shadowed hall. The sun through the curtains threw lace patterns on the dark green hooked rug, and its warmth amplified the odors of her own night sweat and Wonder's fur, sweet, like drying silage. The ticking of the mantel clock echoed off the beveled mirror behind it. Wonder moaned at some menace from his dream. Her fingers found the flat bone of her sternum and pressed to slow the drumming from her heart. She curled her short nails into damp skin between her breasts. Feeling the bone, she remembered how, after her father died, she had wished for colds, so her mother would rub her chest with mentholated ointment and cover it with a cloth warmed by the bulb of the bedside table lamp. She'd lied, faking colds to get her busy, nervous mother near her. She'd felt guilty, wanting her mother's attention, when her mother had her hands full cooking, washing, taking care of her baby brother, and reading the Bible. Wrong to lie about having a cold, just to steal her mother's touch. Her mother's hands had grown nervous and too busy to soothe, pat, or give caresses. It had become clear to Salt that she was on her own. Salt dropped her hand to the dog's smooth head. He lifted his snout, pushing his cold nose to her hot palm, his dreams forgotten. The thumping in her chest began to subside as she synced her breath with Wonder's waking breath. He didn't worry about intruders, and only reacted when need be. Salt's hunger motivated her empathy for the dog, and so, untangling from the afghan, she shifted her feet to the floor. Chapter 33 Confrontation. In other regions of the country, the hot weather would be over. But in Atlanta, summer was dragging her dry skirts into late September. The green leaves had turned brittle and brown at the edges, covered in red dust. In the homes, parched grasses strained to hold ground. What little survived was beaten down and trampled by the feet of residents who longed to be outside, out of close apartments, away from potential confrontations that often boiled over in the heat. The hot wind blew styrofoam food containers, lottery tickets, eviction notices, and cheap advertisements through the rutted streets. Based on the information obtained from Dirty Red's wire, the feds had secured the warrant for Stone, who hadn't been seen for weeks. Salt hadn't even felt him lurking. She watched for Red during her shifts, and hoped that Red would survive both Stone and the crack that the ATF money could buy. Her Thursday shift was over, and exhaustion soaked her to the bone, looking for Red, looking for Stone, watching the gang, Lil D, her eyes straining more and more to see clearly. The sheep were fed and in the paddock. Wonder followed and watched as Salt shed her jeans and boots, turned out all the lights, then padded to the kitchen in t-shirt over panties for the nightly glass of wine. The wide plank floor of the hall felt cool on her feet as she walked back to the living room. Wind from a yet distant storm whipped the branches of the big tree beside the house. Their shadows flailed on the blue-gray of the front room wall. A door slammed somewhere on the unused second floor. Salt set the glass of wine on the lowest step and faced the upstairs. Her mother had closed the house up and moved with her new husband and Salt's brother to North Carolina before Salt had left for college. Salt's mom and her brother had never come back, never, even for a visit. The ghosts that haunted these rooms belonged to Salt alone. The full moonlight, coming through the windows, ebbed and flowed as clouds rushed in front of the storm. Even in total darkness, her feet could find the familiar worn places in the wooden steps. She started up without realizing she was lifting her feet. The wine on an empty stomach was in her bloodstream so quickly. Wender followed, watching her step by step. At the top, the hallway stretched out just as long as it had seemed when she was small. The carpet runner, woven in green and lavender wisteria vines. The hall walls were lined with old portrait photographs, some turn of the century, her father's people. A faint odor of wilted flowers still tinged the mustiness of the hall, bereft of furniture. None of the benches and tables had been left. The doors to all rooms were closed, four bedrooms, two on each side, and, at the very end of the hall, the sleeping porch. She felt unarmed. The moonlight shining in the downstairs windows didn't reach the upstairs hall. Trying to see in the dark, her vision began to blur from the edges to the center. The bedroom doors seemed to shift closer, then farther away. Wender kept stepping in front of her feet, hurting her in no particular direction. She tripped or stepped on his paws, whichever way she turned. Thunder rolled. The dog made a new sound, like a whine. "It's okay. It's far away," she told him. As she reached to smooth his back to calm him, his static-infused fur rose to her palm. Her brother's bedroom was first on the right. When she pushed the door open, although the moon was on the other side of the house, the room was filled by ambient light from the windows. She passed through the bathroom that adjoined their bedrooms. "Ah, bleat, ah, ah." The sheep in the paddock below this side of the house were getting worked up, cueing one another. Wonder's ears twitched, almost vibrating. The carpet on the floor of her old room was faded, and there were permanent indentations where her chest of drawers and bed had been. The old rug had once been sky blue, with all kinds of birds swinging their way across the floor. Now, in the dark, the bright night outside lit up a window-shaped portion of the floor, and the two birds in the shadow frame seemed to float on night air. She left her room by the hall door. Directly across was the guest room, which in her memory had never been used. The hinge whined as the door swung inward. This room was the only one that didn't have a rug. The shades were pulled, but the moonlight snuck around the edges, like it itched to get in. She shut the door and turned to go back toward the stairs, walking quickly past her parents' bedroom door. At the head of the stairs, she stopped. Determined, she turned back and pushed open the door to the big bedroom. Moonlight filled the room, filled every corner, while the wind tossed shadows high on the walls. The roses on the rug were in full bloom, as bright in the night as they had been on the day her father shot himself. Salt shut the door on the moonlit room and stood there, mixing up memories, thinking of dead Chanel on the other side of the door, her hair tangled in a garland of briar roses and dangling wisteria. Wonder gave a short woof and skittered to the stairs. His nails clicked on the downstairs hall floor. When she turned to go down, the door frame of her parents' room shifted and framed the hallway. Her eyes were at it again, merging images, mixing present with the past. She steadied herself on the banister going down. Wonder was at the back door, still giving the short woof sound that meant he didn't have anything to growl at, but was saying, "What? What is it?" In the distance, heat lightning sprang up from and down to the ground. A low rumble sounded from the direction of the city. She put her hand on the dog's head. It's still a ways away. A little strange. He'd never been troubled by storms before. Was she spooking him? The sheep increased their bleats, every one of them, each familiar by their individual shout and tone. They were pushing against the paddock boards and clanking their hooves on the metal gate. Wonder went into a full growl. The first volley tore across the entire back of the house. Salt fell, grabbing for Wonder's collar and rolling them both back toward the kitchen. The refrigerator's skin had holes, not dents. Pepper's words registered in an instant. Armor-piercing. There would be no cover. The shooter didn't have to aim or even be a good shot. The weapon was fully automatic. The second volley was lower and ripped through the back porch and kitchen. Toaster, canisters, and the empty blue jar that had held Wills's orange flowers exploded on the counter. Wonder pulled at his collar to get to the screaming, terrified, bleeding sheep, their hooves frantic against the fence. She had to move, but standing up to run for her gun hanging on the closet door in the bedroom would make her an easy target. She calculated the seconds it would take to go the 12 yards. There was another fully automatic blast, but this time not at the house. The silent seconds afterward were broken by the sound of only one sheep, bitter but precious information. The gunman was, in those moments, pointing away from the house, killing the sheep. She grabbed the dog and sprinted for the bedroom, just as the next spray ripped through the walls. She scrambled through the hallway, her hand on Wonder's collar, dragging him along as he was working against her, trying to get out to the sheep, whose cries were fewer and fewer. "That will do," she commanded him, while throwing both herself and the dog into the bedroom. The gunman, still outside, was closing in. Glass shattered in the hallway, the family photos. Salt snatched the gun from her belt on the door hook and shoved the dog inside the closet. "That'll do," she repeated, latching the closet door. The back screen door slammed. Without looking, she came out shooting toward the kitchen with one hand while tearing from the bedroom to the living room. Another spray of bullets followed her. Then there was silence, except for the sound of a gun clip dropping, the click of another magazine shoved into a weapon, and the bleeding of one sheep, the smallest dam. Then Stone's voice. "Here, doggy, doggy," high with false sweetness. Salt threw her arm around the stairwell wall, fired into the hall, and ran for the second floor. Rounds raced her, tearing through the upstairs floor behind her. She reached the double doors of the sleeping porch, looked back down the hallway of broken glass, splintered wood, her bloody footprints, and the top of Stone's head appearing from the stairwell. Aiming, forcing herself to breathe and bring into focus both front and back sights, she fired just as the sights doubled in her dominant eye. The upstairs hall shattered as she leaped over the rail of the second-floor porch onto the slanting roof. Faintly, the wail of a siren entered her consciousness before she began rolling, weapon flying, nails grabbing for purchase, hearing that one bleeding damn calling from the paddock. There were puddles under her arms, rain pelting her face. The heat had been washed by the storm, and she was cold. A voice drawled, "She's a-opening her eyes." Somebody called Central Casting. That was the voice of a southern sheriff, if ever there was one. Then a matching voice in the rich black range. "That ambulance, ETA, one away." Salt squinted from a flashlight's glare, but could see very clearly the fine white wires that joined together in the bulb of the light. Chapter 34. Medicinal Purposes. The rolling bed of the CAT scan machine delivered Salt out of its tomb and into the bright examining room. Pepper, sitting in a plastic chair against a near wall, leaned forward. Wonder, wearing a Red Cross rescue saddle, was on the floor beside him, the whites of his eyes showing, watching the technician. "Good boy," she said. Wonder trotted over and licked her lowered hand. "Thank Mr. Gooden for bringing him," she said to Pepper.
"You can do that yourself. He's in the waiting room."
Pepper's smile, as always, warmed the room.
"The dog's good medicine. He just needed a cover story."
"Hey, guys, just because we got him the disguise doesn't mean he could take over," grumbled the burly nurse, helping Salt off the machine and onto another exam table. Her muscles were beginning to stiffen. Bloody abrasions down her right arm and leg stung when she moved. The hospital gown didn't do much in the way of concealing the scrapes and scratches. Her mother's huge hydrangea bush had apparently broken her fall, as well as hidden her from Stone, before he fled the sirens. She was scratched and bruised, and there was what the doctors called suspicious tissue in the area of the old head injury.
"The doc will be with you in a few," the nurse said, hitting the automatic door panel and leaving the room.
Blue paper hospital slippers covered the cuts on her feet. Salt pointed them toward Pepper.
"Self-inflicted. I ran through the broken glass of family photos."
His expression didn't change, his eyes studying her, his mouth set.
"Something's catching up to you. Does it have to do with family? You ready to tell me what?"
The automatic door sounded, and a young guy with an energetic walk almost jogged into the room.
"I'm Dr. Quick." "Don't say it. You're Officer Ault. How's your eyesight?"
Salt blinked, squeezed her eyes shut, then opened them. No fuzziness on the periphery, no ghosts floating in the light.
"I think it's actually better."
"How long since you've been having problems with your vision?"
The doctor seemed very young to be a specialist. He had blonde hair, blonde eyelashes, his blue eyes clear and sharp. Pepper was looking at her, with his head slightly cocked and his eyebrows raised. He was not smiling, and a scar moved up and down as he clenched his jaw.
"Honestly, I've kept thinking it would clear up."
"Since I was shot in April, Doc," she answered, still looking at Pepper.
"Salt," Pepper said.
He and Wonder both lowered their heads.
"Do you know how this makes me feel?"
I know. I should have said something."
The doctor stepped to the side.
"Guys, I'm gonna go check on another patient. I'll be back shortly."
He backed out of the room with a small smile and a wave.
"Pepper."
She rolled her head toward the closing door.
"It makes me feel like you don't trust me."
She sat up, holding the open-backed gown to her chest. Her legs dangled. She felt very like a child, throat muscles tightening.
"It was just," she croaked, "my father."
"What about your father?"
Pepper sat up straight. She noticed that he was wearing jeans, but instead of a shirt, he had on a pajama top covered in little white clouds on a sky blue background. He must have dressed in a hurry.
You mean you hadn't heard about him?"
"All these years, girl, I've left it to you to talk about him. Figured you would talk about him when you could."
"I needed him. I needed to keep him close."
Pepper came over and put his hand on her head. Then she cried. The clouds on Pepper's shirt held the rain, and she started to laugh. Salt didn't have to be admitted, but the doctor insisted she return for further tests regarding her head injury. The clarity of vision that she had recovered in the previous night's encounter remained. By 10 a.m., Pepper had her and Wonder in his minivan, headed for last night's scene of destruction. When they came within sight of the long drive to the old white house, Wonder stood up on the back seat and began that short woof again, the woof that had been the warning before Stone's assault. There were cars and trucks,